This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our November 6th, 2017 edition of Invest Talk. And as always, we are here to help you become an above average investor and rise above the ranks of the average, because nobody wants to be average. And we say that because we believe that by following the fundamental rules and applying some discipline, which is frankly the hardest thing to master in this game of investing, you can really break out of the ranks of that average investor and avoid the costly mistakes of chasing performance and getting worked up over the latest hot thing and overpaying for investments, whether that's a stock or an ETF, a mutual fund, whatever it is, and potentially missing out on opportunities because of the narrative that maybe is overly negative as well. So the mistakes of the average investor run the gamut. And it all starts, however, with having an emotional attachment to a particular story, a particular company, a particular investment that you think is just going to be the greatest thing since sliced bread, when if you look at the fundamentals and you take a step back and you think about it logically, you will see that may not be as great as it sounds. I always tell people, when things are great, it's probably not as good as it feels right now. And when things are really bad, it's probably not as bad as things feel at that time either. So it's usually somewhere in the middle, and you need to temper your emotions and use logic. Now, you're invited to use our 24-hour listener line for your questions this hour, as usual. Now, we can talk live during this 4 to 5 Pacific time hour. You can leave your question on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART, and we'll go to that line in a moment. But today, another update on the market. Stocks closed at another all-time high, and as we watch stock prices rise even higher, we want to put an asterisk next to the number, flagging them as overpriced, and we're living with an overpriced market. And the old saying is the markets can stay irrational longer than you can stay solvent. And we're living in an irrational world with central banks printing money, billions and billions of dollars each month, and that's really the main cause of all this. So how should we respond? Well, is there a cause for concern for investors looking forward? And the answer is probably yes, but that shouldn't discourage you from working and finding the right mix and the right assets for you, for your goals. Just because the broad market overall is overvalued doesn't mean there's not opportunities. We bought a stock today for a lot of our clients. Found a good value in it. So Steve and I are going to try. There we go. All right. Well, let's see. We're going to go to a break, and let's open our 24-hour listen line now. Let's check in with a question at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Aaron calling from Reno. I just had a question for you guys. I'm invested in the market, have some mutual funds and some stocks, and have about $80,000 on the sideline waiting for the pending 10 or 20% correction if and when it comes. And right now I have that money parked in a Vanguard federal money market account making 0.99%. They have one-year CDs that pay about 1.5%, nine-month CDs that pay 1.35%. I'm just wondering what your recommendations might be on how I can actually make that money work a little harder but still be very safe. I appreciate what you guys do and look forward to your answer on the air. Thanks a lot. Bye.
All right, he's dealing with an issue that is... very common in today's market, which is interest rates are very low. It's very difficult to find a way to make some money on your money. And money markets at 0.9%, while they're better than they were a year or so ago, it's still very, very low. And he's asking, should he put in a CD? Right? A nine-month CD might earn a little bit more. The question is Are we going to get that pullback in the market in the meantime, in the maybe 3 months from now? Maybe there's a large drop in the market and you have the opportunity to put that money to work at that time. And if it's in CD, they're fairly liquid, so you might have to give up some of your interest that you're earning on that. But you have to check the rules of your CD, et cetera, because they all kind of are a little bit different. Usually that's really what it is. If you want to take your money out before the end of the CD term, then you need to give up whatever interest you've earned over the current time frame. So not a big loss, so certainly not the worst idea in the world, but is it worth that extra couple of tenths of a percentage point? Well, it depends on how much money you have, right? And depends on how good you are at finding great values in the market or in a pullback in the market. So there's a lot of factors to consider, but to me, I would just keep that money market 0.9% liquid. You can go and use that money tomorrow to buy any investment you want, and you can use a part of it. Whereas in a CD, you're going to have to cash in the whole thing to use just a little bit of it. So I would just stick with the money market, earn your 0.9%. Think Chair Yellen for raising rates and find those great opportunities when they present themselves. Now here's a KPP investment program that may suit you. KPP believes we have a program that can really help get the most from your 401k at work. It's called Active 401k. This is a new system that can help meet a serious challenge for the average investor and how to make informed choices within the limits of their employer's plan. I know it's difficult. Studies show only 7% of participants make a change in any given year, which is crazy because 90% of a portfolio's returns come from asset allocation. And employees aren't making any changes to that. So that is a really, really big issue. And understandably, people don't know what to do. And that's really what this is designed for. So if you'd like to know more about it, just go to investtalk.com, click on the investments tab, and then look for Active 401k.
Do you know the difference between term life and whole life or universal life? When you sign up to be an InvestTalk Insider, you gain instant access to an entire library of info sheets, each one prepared by the KPP staff to be informative and straight to the point. Plain talk about important money matters. It's completely free. You can check it out right there on InvestTalk.com.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. That's how you get through and ask your question on today's show. We have about 40 minutes left in the show, so I always tell people to call sooner rather than later. I know everyone waits till the end of the hour, and sometimes we don't get to everybody, so I like to get to everybody. Now, let's take a look at the market today. We had the Dow up 9 points, the S&P up 3, and the NASDAQ up 22. Overall, a modest up day. You know, markets closed at all-time high, but, you know, kind of a modest up day. We had some big news over the weekend out of Saudi Arabia, the consolidation of power and the ideas that they're cracking down on corruption. Whether you believe that or not, it's hard to really gauge at this point whether that's true. But it's certainly something to be have a watchful eye on. You had some M&A news out of Broadcom that is looking to buy Qualcomm, and I think the market likes that overall for Broadcom, because Broadcom has good management and Qualcomm has shown at least in the recent past to not have that great of management. So that's why Qualcomm was up, and so was Broadcom, because that could the leadership there could turn around Qualcomm overall. So modest up day. The market is we had the Fed announcement last week. Really, the market's expecting the Fed to raise rates in December, and until we get a market pullback, I don't think that is going to change. I'm financial advisor and licensed real estate consultant Justin Klein. What's your investment strategy? Capital preservation, growth, speculation, or income? You should really have a clear idea before you invest your money. Want to talk about it? 888-99-CHART is our number for any money questions right now on InvestTalk. Go to BJ in Fremont. How are you doing, BJ?
I'm doing good. Thanks for taking my call. My question is related to Berkshire, B shares.
Okay.
And recently, I have some of them already. And with all the insurance losses, I think the other sector did very well on Friday's earnings. The insurance sector was hit because of the effect on the East Coast and previous hurricanes. So what do you think at this point? I think with the interest rates likely to go up, financial sector is supposed to do well. What do you think of the Berkshire B shares potential?
Well, I don't view Berkshire as a pure insurance company. Certainly, Geico is a very large part of their business, but they also bought, Norfolk Southern? They have a lot of other types of businesses in their portfolio. So it's not going to be a pure insurance play, right? You're really buying the portfolio of businesses that Berkshire has acquired throughout the years, and a lot of them are very industrial-focused, along with, obviously, Geico, and you have the transportation, the railroads with Norfolk Southern. And he's bought, I think he has a stake in Kraft Heinz as well. I mean, there's a lot of companies within it, and to me it's more of an index because of the diversification of the business, and you're buying an index that is pretty well managed, is invested at correct or at least discounted prices. So to me, I don't buy Berkshire as a trade. It's probably one of the worst trading vehicles to play off of any particular factor, because each catalyst that you might see that might affect the businesses inside Berkshire are going to have very small effects overall compared to a pure insurance play, right? So to me, Berkshire is one of those stocks that you buy and you just hold it as a part of a diversified portfolio, and you don't really think about selling it. And that's really the only role I see for Berkshire in a portfolio. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so what you are saying is it should be one of the core holdings, right? Which is
it's a core, exactly, with the overall holding.
Economy and their diversification, you get exposure to all the industry, and economy is doing pretty good, so there is no immediate what you call a fear of is going down considerably at this point, and this blip may be a good entry point to accumulate some more?
Well, it's certainly expensive in relation to its long-term average. If you look at its enterprise value to EBIT ratio, it's about 15, which it's certainly been higher than that in the late 90s and early 2000s, but it's definitely been lower than that in the recent past. So it's certainly not an ideal buying point long term. You're certainly going to see a recession most likely next 3 or 4 years, and that will be a much better time to be buying Berkshire long term. But it's one of those things where if you just want it to be part of your portfolio, buy and hold long term, this is certainly not a terrible time to invest in it, but be prepared for volatility, because it does have a lot of cyclical businesses within it.
Okay.
Thanks for the call, BJ. No problem. We're going to go to Matthew in New Jersey next, but this is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. Invest Talk is a two-way conversation. It's not about me. It's about your life and your money life. So let's hear from you. Tell me about your retirement portfolio or your goals. 888-99-CHART. That's how I get through and ask your question on today's show. Let's go to Goal in Fremont. How are you doing, Goal?
Hi, Justin. Great show. Love your show. I have a question on a fund, UOPIX. UOP as
okay.
in Peter, IX.
Okay.
I bought this back in January, and it's done very well. And I'm just wondering whether I should... Time to part. I did well. So should I part? Should I hold on?
You're certainly in a high risk fund. This is the NASDAQ Ultra, the ProShares Ultra NASDAQ 100 Investor Class, UOPIX. So this is a leveraged fund. Let's see how much it's leveraged by. Do you know if it's double leveraged, triple leveraged?
It's double.
Double leveraged. Okay. So, you know, these any leverage fund is going to look fantastic when that particular asset class is doing well, which certainly the NASDAQ 100 recently has been doing well, but it's a very risky index. Everyone's crowded into, you know, the FANG stocks and excited about the high flying tech names, but certainly vast majority of them are extremely overvalued. And I think you're at this point, you're playing with house money. What percent are you up?
I'm almost 50% up.
Okay. So what I would do is I would take your initial investment off the table here, whatever that was.
Okay.
Keep that 50% and have a trailing stop on it. Maybe it's and it's going to have to be a wide one for this type of name. Probably a 15% trailing stop. So if it drops 15% from its high, which would be about 7.5, right, on the overall NASDAQ 100, then I would get out. But I would definitely take your initial investment off the table, and the rest is house money, right?
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Makes sense. No problem, Gold. Thanks for calling. That was UOPIX. That is the symbol of the ProShares Ultra NASDAQ 100 mutual fund. Now, speaking of that, it's a great segue into our talking point today, and that's all about indexing and how indexes aren't all the same. While most investors or more and more investors are using index funds and ETFs to hold their stocks and bonds, there's new research that underscores how much difference there can be between indexes that on the surface look the same, but in reality are not. And there's growth-oriented index funds, there's value-oriented index funds, and they can be strikingly different even though they say the same thing, right? If they're two small cap value funds can be drastically different, and the returns and fees over the long term can also be drastically different. And it all depends on how they're built, what fund family's issuing them, etc. Now, long-term, small companies tend to outperform large ones, right? And lower price-to-book ratio stocks tend to outperform companies with higher price-to-book ratio stocks over the long term. And so this is why equal-weighted funds tend to do better than market cap weighted funds, because equal weighted funds tend to have a higher percentage of the portfolio in small cap stocks versus the market cap weighted ones tend to be weighted towards large companies, right? And over the long term, smaller companies tend to outperform. And same thing on the value side. When you introduce some sort of value filter like price to book, price to earnings, etc., usually get better returns over the long run. And there's a good example of this. And this article uses three different funds that are all U.S. small cap value funds, index funds. The Morningstar U.S. Small Cap Value Index, the Russell 2000 Small Cap Value Index, and the S&P Small Cap 600 U.S. Value Index. You would think all three would be very, very similar. Well, the Morningstar U.S. Small Value Fund, average market cap is $2.6 billion, whereas the S&P one is $1.4 billion. So average size of the companies in the Morningstar index are almost twice as large as the S&P. And you would think, well, that means the S&P one will probably perform better because it has smaller companies. Well, that's not exactly true. Over 20 years, Morningstar one has been the best performer, 10.06% versus 9.4% for the S&P and 8.6% for the Russell. And the difference is drastic over the long term. It can mean thousands and thousands of dollars in investment returns if you're not investing in the right index. And the reason, and you're going to say, well, okay, small cap stocks tend to do better, so why is Morningstar so much better? Well, because they require companies to be profitable to qualify for its value index. meaning they have to make money. So there's that valuation qualifier that adds that little bit of better performance to the fund overall. And you wouldn't know that unless you actually read up on the Morningstar Small Cap Value Index. If you look at the three on the surface, you're going to think that they're all the same. So it's really important, and this is why I say indexing is, there's still an active nature to indexing, because how that index is created is up to the committee of who's in charge of that particular index. And if the index makes the right choice, that's great for the index, and vice versa. So don't think indexing is the end-all be-all. It can be good, but there are pitfalls. Give us a call. I want to hear from you. 888-99-CHART is how to reach me live, 4 to 5 Pacific Time, on Invest Talk.
Our podcast continues next. Steve talks about the stock market being overvalued, and that condition is not likely to change anytime soon. According to Steve, it could stay overvalued for a long time. So investors are asking questions. How am I going to grow my portfolio when the market is so overpriced? Should this be a concern? Join registered investment advisors Steve Peasley and Justin Klein Thursday, November 16th, for a free live webinar, How to Find Income and Value in an Overpriced Market. If you're looking for value for the long-term investor, we have a bargain hunting technique to share. It's again November 16th, 6:30 Pacific Time. It's free, but attendance is limited, so sign up soon. Just go to investtalk.com. That's InvestTalk with two T's, investtalk.com, and click on the InvestTalk tab. And now let's continue with the podcast. This is InvestTalk, 1 hour of financial news and perspective, where you can talk directly with a registered investment advisor. Bring your questions right now to Justin. Our direct line is 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to Jay in Fremont. How are you doing, Jay?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing great. What can I do for you?
I have a question on ticker GSK. It's a GlaxoSmithKline. It's fallen down from 42 down to 36. And it gives, I think, 5% dividend. So I wanted to know if it's a good price or should I wait? Thank you.
Thanks for calling. Well, it's certainly down from a high of, let's go all the way back to 2014. High in the mid-50s. Now we're in the mid-30s. So quite the drop on the name. It does yield about 5.5%. And one of the main reasons for the drop had to do with revenue, earnings. Its cash from operations fell during that time from somewhere in the neighborhood of $11 billion all the way down to around a little over $4 billion. Luckily, it's recovered to about $9.5 billion, meaning we're not quite at all-time highs, but we're back near those levels, and that's certainly a positive. They've made some great changes, and they have a pretty good pipeline. Now, the dividend payout ratio is certainly on the higher side, 178%. So they're paying out more than they earn. Now, if you could base it on cash flow, that's only 83%, but that's still 83% still high. So that 5.5% dividend, while attractive, and I do think it is sustainable because of the strength of their business, strength of their pipeline, I think it's certainly on the higher risk side of average. So understand that. Understand that this is a higher risk name because of how kind of stretched it is to pay that dividend. And it's also likely going to fluctuate based on the pound, the value of the pound. Remember, this is a UK company. So you have fluctuations based on the value of the pound. And so don't expect that to be ultra consistent. That's going to be in the territory of 5.5%. But depending on foreign currency translations, that could change slightly. So certainly above average risk level for a dividend paying name, but it's good value at these levels, good profitability, and I think their business is certainly turning around after a few years of rough times. 888-99 chart, 888-992-4278. We have 20 minutes left in the show to get your call in, so call sooner rather than later. Now, speaking of dividends, which that caller was calling about, let's focus a little bit on dividends and the fact that you probably shouldn't focus on dividends alone. Now, dividends might appear very important, but dividend payments can be great handcuffs for managers. And the handcuffs can be a good thing or it can be a bad thing, right? And the reason that it can be a good thing is many managers, many CEOs, many management teams, they want to go out there and use that cash flow from a business to buy other companies, a lot of times at too high of prices, and the acquisition is just too ambitious. It's they paid too much. I'm thinking DirecTV and AT&T is one example. We can go back in history of many mergers where the acquiring company just paid drastically too much. Time Warner and AOL, for example. So there's history is littered with these examples of large companies buying other large companies to make a giant company, and it was just a terrible acquisition. And when dividends are thrown into the mix and they're paying out that cash flow, there's less likelihood that that management team will go out there and make these empire-building moves and overpay for names. So that's why it can be a positive. Now, it can be a negative if that company has the ability to reinvest that cash into the business and grow the business. If it can do that, then paying out a dividend is actually a handcuff that can reduce the overall return over the long term of the investment in a particular company. So there's two ways to think about dividends, whether it can be good and it can be bad. Now, if you look back in history of high-yielding stocks versus lower-yielding counterparts, certainly high-yielding stocks outperform over the long term. And this performance pattern can be explained by high dividend payers' tendency to trade at lower valuations. Why? Because they tend to have lower growth, and growth stocks tend to trade at premiums, usually built into the stock, so people tend to buy those at overvalued, overpriced levels. So when you talk about dividend investing, in a lot of ways, it's really value investing. It's just value investing in a different name. Okay, and as InvestTalk, KPP, Steve, and myself, we are value investors. We look at the fundamentals of a business, the cash flow, the long-term growth potential, the sustainability of their business. And that's really the most important thing. Not just, oh, does it pay 5%? Does it pay 8%? Doesn't that dividend that it's paying today doesn't matter nearly as much as the sustainability of that dividend and the long-term growth trajectory of the business overall. How strong is their brand, their technology, their leadership, right? Their customer base, how sticky is it? How cyclical is their business, right? The least cyclical names tend to have the best long-term performance of their stock and the lower volatility. So that's something to consider as well. So when you're the bottom line is, don't focus on dividends alone. In fact, there's danger in chasing yield. You think of names like Bank of America, ConocoPhillips. They cut their dividend a while ago, or back in the financial crisis, right? And Bank of America at least did. ConocoPhillips after the oil spill, after oil prices dropped sharply. These are all examples of companies that were paying out too much. And it's the first thing when a company is getting a little bit of trouble is the fact that they can cut their dividend. They can cut dividend payments, but they can easily cut their dividend quickly. And you need to be aware of that, that dividends aren't sacrosanct. Let's go to Mike in New Jersey. How are you doing, Mike?
Hi. So I like to talk about GE.
Okay.
You still there? Yeah. Okay.
Yep, I'm here.
So they finally got rid of their CEO after 15 years. They have a new one in. The stock is floating at around $20. It's down pretty heavily after earnings. The new CEO discussed cutting the dividend to try and bring the margins back up. What are your thoughts on GE? Do you think it's at a good buy right now, or should we wait and see what the new CEO does with the dividend?
I actually think it's getting really close to a good buy. I'm looking at their long-term potential of their business, their brand, the diversification of their business. They certainly have still a lot going for them, even though they've stumbled in a lot of areas and misallocated some capital over the last 10 years. And their business is certainly suffering for various reasons. And they need to restructure. So I think it's a good news for shareholders. It's a good idea that they are thinking about right-sizing their business, selling off certain assets, maybe reducing their debt level, and focusing on their core business. So I think that is a positive. Now, technically, the stock is in a downtrend, but it is near some support. And you had a kind of a modest up day. I think that was, what, Friday? It looks like. Yeah, Friday, and it went down a little bit today. So I'm not seeing that real change in sentiment on the chart yet. It's certainly oversold, and I think long term this will be in hindsight a good buying opportunity. But the question is it a great buying opportunity? Meaning, is this the bottom? It's really hard to know. The one thing I like recently is that there's been massive, massive amounts of volume. And that tells me that investors are starting to capitulate. The dividend investors are jumping ship. And if you're focused more on the business and you don't care that dividend yield, which right now is 4.7%, you don't care if that goes to 1%, I think you're pretty close to a great long-term buying opportunity. But you have to be patient and willing to accept. Could go down another 10%, could go down another 20%. And if you're willing to do that, willing to maybe buy more if it goes down that much, I think now is a good starter position around these levels.
Okay, so you think it's important to hear what the CEO has to say about the dividend before doing anything?
See, I think this is one of those examples of the saying is buy the rumor, sell the news. And in this case, it's kind of sell the rumor, buy the news. I think that it's selling off in anticipation of a dividend cut. And I think they will cut their dividend for various reasons, partly to reduce their debt. Their payout ratio is extremely high, especially their cash dividend payout ratio, because they're burning cash right now. Their free cash flow level is negative $577 million quarterly, which is a lot of money. And they need to figure that out. Certainly, they're going to need to sell off some businesses, and that will make it even harder to sustain their business in the short term. Sustain their dividend in the short term. So I think it's one of those things, like I said, it's the market selling the rumor, and I think they'll buy the news whenever that news comes out. So I do think we're close. We've been eyeing it. We haven't pulled the trigger yet, but it's certainly close to, I think, a long-term great buying opportunity for GE.
Great. Okay. Thank you. I appreciate it.
No problem, Mike. Thanks for calling in. Now, here's an investing term you should know. What is a trailing stop? This is a very good, especially talking about GE. You got to put in a trailing stop. Maybe that's $17 a share, $16 a share. There's some level that it's too much pain. But a trailing stop order that can be set at a defined percentage away from a security's current market price. And a trailing stop for a long position would be set below the security's current market price. And for a short position, it would be set above the current market price to cover that position. Now, a trailing stop is designed to protect gains and enable a trade to remain open and kind of ride the wave, right? Ride the wave of the trend of that particular security, whether that's you're shorting a position that's in a downtrend or you're buying a position that's in an uptrend. And you want to close the trade if the price changes direction by a specific percentage. So a trailing stop can also specify a dollar amount instead of a percentage. So you, instead of saying, oh, if it goes down 12% from its high, I sell. You could say, if it goes down $2 from its high, I want to sell. And that's known as a chandelier stop. A little different term, but kind of the same thing. Now, for more detailed definition, just go to our friends at investopedia.com. 888-99-CHART is our direct line to our anytime 24-hour line at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve and Justin. I'm calling about the ticker symbol PPL, Peter Logan. I currently own it, and I'm wondering if you think I should buy more at the current state or just your thoughts in general about the stock. Look forward to hearing your answer on the program. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
All right, he's looking at PPL Corporation. This is a holding company engaged in electric generation, marketing, and distribution in northeastern and northwestern United States. So it's an electric power utility company. It yields about 4.3%. Return on equity 17%, which is pretty nice. P ratio is about 16. Let me look at its operating earnings yield. About 12%, very nice. They do have a pretty hefty amount of debt, but that's typical for a utility company, certainly a business that is anti-cyclical, not going to move up and down too much, even though their earnings are down 26% year over year. That's not a good thing. Revenues are down about 11% year over year, not that much. And certainly there's going to be fluctuations with the cost of their inputs and regulatory price hikes and things like that that will affect the industry and their particular regions and states as a whole. You know, it's gone down from about 40 from its all-time high to 36 now, so you're about a 10% pullback in the market in this stock. I kind of like utilities overall, even though I do think interest rates are going to rise a little bit. That worries me somewhat. It's okay. It's not exciting. It's not overvalued. It's not undervalued. Its dividend is, I think, relatively safe. Payout ratio is about 70%. Little on the high side, but not worrisome for a utility overall. Its profitability is still solid. Like I said, return on equity 17%. You know, just kind of ho-hum. It's okay. I give it like a hold rating if you want utilities, but... it doesn't get me excited, but if you're looking for income, I don't think it's going away, and long-term, it's probably a good hold, but it just doesn't get me worked up. So, I guess that's my take. It depends on your goal of your portfolio. If you want to make a lot of money, it probably isn't the one that's going to do it over the short to medium term, but long-term, it can be a good part of a diversified portfolio. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278 is how you get through and ask your question on Invest Talk, and you're listening to Invest Talk. We have just a few moments remaining in the hour, about 7-8 minutes left, but there's still time for you. So if you have any money questions, you can reach me now with your question at that same number, as always, 888-99-CHART. And coming up next on Invest Talk, with interest rates still low, investors need to be creative. Focusing on low-cost investments such as ETFs may be part of an income strategy. Brainstorming income investing, that's next time on Invest Talk. But what's your topic today? My direct line is from 4 to 5 Pacific time is 888-99-CHART.
Hi, I have a question about retirement money. My girlfriend, when she graduated college, left a job through the college that had money. It was called a smart fund. The job didn't pay into Social Security, so they took money aside and put it in an account, relatively low fees, but relatively low risk. And so we wanted to move that money into an IRA. So I was wondering if that made sense. She also was working for a company that had a 401k. She left that job, and she currently does not have another job lined up that offers a 401k. Do you think it would make sense to also roll that money into an IRA, maybe through Vanguard or Fidelity? Or do you think it would make sense to hold it where it is until she gets another job with a 401k? Any insight you could add would be greatly appreciated. Thanks so much, guys.
I would definitely say roll that into an IRA, both of those accounts if you can. I've never heard of a smart fund. Maybe you're maybe it's probably like a 403B most likely. It might be just called a smart fund or something like that, especially if it's a university. But both can be rolled together into a rollover IRA, and that will allow you to unlock opportunities in other funds, individual stocks, bonds, etc., that will most likely be lower fees, more advantageous, more flexible with whatever your investing goals are. Now, the only caveat there is that in a 401k at 55, you can take money out penalty free from a 401k. Whereas an IRA, it's 59.5. So there's that 4.5 year difference. But the odds are that you probably don't want to be taking money out of 55. You're probably still going to be working. At least I think he said his fiance, she'll probably still be working, and she'll want to continue to save and build up that IRA over time anyway. So I would definitely put it in the IRA. The benefits certainly outweigh the negatives of keeping it in the 401k and the limitations of a 401k or a 403b, and that's why we have active 401k. That's why we have launched that for our listeners and our clients, because it's very difficult to figure out how to allocate a 401k account, because of the limitations within the plan, and getting outside of that into an IRA, which, you know, we manage for a lot of clients. I would say roughly half of the accounts we have from clients are IRAs or Roth IRAs. So we can certainly help potentially manage that account for you and your fiance as well. Great question. Great call. Glad you made it. And hopefully that gave a little nugget of information for everybody else out there. Now, quickly before we wrap up, I want to talk a little bit about the bond market and how 2018 is going to be a very, very different bond market. And the reason is because QE is starting to wind down around the world. And there's about to be $825 billion less in QE in 2018, and that's a lot of money that's not being printed, that is currently being printed. Now, peak QE was 2016, and you've had a reduction this year, but a much bigger reduction is coming next year, and that is because of the European Central Bank, which is going to be buying only $30 billion of bond, 30 billion euros, sorry, of bonds in 2018, from January through September. So each month we're buying 30 billion less, whereas after that they're going to stop buying bonds altogether. So that's a big, big change of what's going on in the marketplace, along with our central bank, the Fed. They're reducing their reinvestment in the bond market, in the treasury market, and that's certainly going to bring down our level of money flowing into the bond market. And then you have the Swiss National Bank, the Bank of Japan also reducing their purchases most likely. So odds are interest rates are going to start to rise in the rather near future because of lower demand from various places. So be prepared for higher interest rates. I don't think it's going to be dramatically higher, but I could see a 1% move in treasuries rather easily over the next year. So be prepared. Time to wrap it up. A reminder, if you think it's time for retirement tune-up, you're probably right. Markets change as well as your life situations change. No matter where you live, we can get the job done via phone or Skype or FaceTime. To reserve your hours, go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab, then Portfolio Review. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein, Chief Executive Officer of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. Glad you could be with us. On behalf of Steve Peasley and the whole KPP family, I want to thank you for being part of the program. Let's meet again here tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing.